domestic help, because that is what our role is. That is what being a woman is about when you link it to traditional stereotypes. And this shift further reinforced this financial dependency on men, and it created this cycle where women's work inside the home was never considered, quote, real work, and economic value was only being tied to this real wage labor. So there's a real lack of valuation placed on the labor within the home, and it was just dismissed as an act of love. Like, it's what you were meant to do when you got married and you had children. That's just where women were kind of slotted in. They were expected to raise, feed, and educate the next generation of workers for free. And it's still seen today that women should naturally be responsible for the household. It's changing, but it is still seen today. I mean, I look at my family, for example. I mean, I'm 21 now, but my mum, she was an architect, and she, by her own choice, she does like to say it was by her own choice, because my dad brought in more money. It also did make sense for my mum to be the one to leave her job and to raise me and my brother. And so my mum left, like, she got married, and when she fell pregnant and had my brother, she left her job. She had my brother, raised my brother. My brother is 2 years older than me, had me, raised me, and she didn't go back to work until I was about 8 years old. So if my brother's 10, when I'm 8, that's like she was out of work for a good like 10 years. She took a career break of about 10 years to raise us, partly because she chose to, but was it because she felt like she was expected to because of society and how she socialized into it? Because she didn't earn as much money as my dad did. My dad was the clear one to stay working, as he would bring in more money. So there's this socialization. Yes, it's changing, but obviously very, very slowly, considering my family, like how I was raised and my family set up, very much nuclear family ideology. And even though my dad loves to say that he would rather have been a stay-at-home dad, that wasn't the way it was. And I think of all of my friends, pretty much all grew up exact same kind of mold or framework as I was. And my mum, yeah, no, she didn't get paid for doing any of that. None of them got paid for doing any of that. And she gave up so much of like her career and what she would have wanted to achieve in order to do that. And yet now when she's back at work, she still did a lot of the domestic labor, the upkeep of the house, the laundry, the cooking, the making sure we got to school and things like that, even while she was working. So then you get this kind of change where women are expected to be doing this unpaid labor as well as this paid labor, which I talk about a bit later in the article anyway. But yeah, so you're seeing women expected to raise, feed, and educate this whole new generation of what will be essentially be workers for capitalism for free. And then in the 20th century, women were starting to fight back, and you can see it through the feminist movements. If you look back in history and all the feminist movements, the most notable like starting point is the likes of the suffragette movement from 1903 to around 1914 that were campaigning for the right to vote for women. And it was a very radical campaign. It was, I remember learning about it at school, and it was very kind of hard to hear about. They would go on hunger strike and being force-fed in prison and things like that. But ultimately, after 11 years of campaigning, women got the right to vote. Then you move on to kind of second wave feminism, where it's kind of known as the women's liberation movement. And this was from around, it started around the 1960s, going to probably around 1980s, and it's focusing on equal pay, access to contraception and abortion, challenging societal norms about women's roles. It was all about making women independent. So you had the introduction of the contraceptive pill in the 1960s, which was seen as this big symbol of women's control over their fertility and sexuality. Again, with the abortions, that's also coming across in that aspect. And talking about equal opportunity in employment and pay. You had the first woman in space in the 1960s as well. So that's all happening around that time. And then you move on to third wave feminism as the last part of the 20th century in the 1990s, which kind of criticizes second wave feminism and being too narrow-minded, but it addresses more the intersectionality of issues, kind of having this emphasis on a diversity of a woman's experience. So they start to look more at race, class, sexuality, because second wave feminism had a real big focus on the white woman's experience. So all of these movements are breaking down barriers that capitalism had put in place and brought women back into the workforce, back into paid labor, particularly post-world wars. Obviously, women had to adapt and replace the workforce that had dwindled from men going to war. So when World War II was over and men are coming back and they're going back into the workforce, women didn't want to just step aside and go back into the housewife role. They proved that they could be on equal playing field as men in the workforce when they kept society functioning. They kept the fires burning at home whilst they were away fighting at war. So women basically enter back into the workforce now. And this all seems like a really good thing, but capitalism has this funny habit of adapting, and it adapted again and welcomed women back into the workforce, but on some specific terms. So for one, the gender pay gap. Women were welcomed back into the workforce, but they're paid less than men for the same work. And you still see that today. Women are still paid quite significantly less than men when they're in the same jobs. If you look at managerial and CEO statistics and jobs, there are very few women in those top positions. I'm not currently aware of up-to-date statistics from recent years, but I remember in my A-levels it was around 2020, 2021. There's a statistic that says only 5% of managerial CEO positions were given to women in the UK. And also the type of work. So women were welcomed back into the workforce, but they are overrepresented in the low-paying, care-focused industries. So like teaching, nursing, domestic help, social workers. This mirrors the labor that was all unpaid at home and that is still unpaid at home. So like I was saying before, this leads to an expectation of women to have to balance both unpaid household labor with paid labor. And it results in exhaustion and burnout. And there's not this recognition of what women are doing in their own households for day-to-day lives to be functioning. But yet it's recognized if they're doing it for other people and getting paid for it, even if it is low pay. So they get that you wouldn't get recognized for the labor that you do to look after your children and your husband and keep the house running, but you'd be recognized if you were doing that for another family, or say you were working in a care home for elderly people. It would be recognized that way, not nearly valued as much as it should, but you're getting it recognized in that aspect. So it's interesting to see that capitalism recognized the type of work, but only in certain circumstances. So yeah, I'm gonna take a pause there before I go on to kind of the last section of the article and talk a bit about what that article says and things, because I feel like I'm running on steam. I feel like whenever I talk about gender issues, I get very, I don't know, heated and just kind of want to get all the information out, because it still shocks me when I hear all this information. So we're going to switch to another song. I'm going to play a song I discovered today, actually, by one of my favorite artists called The Wombats. It's another Liverpool indie rock band, but this is from their album that they released earlier this year called Oh, The Ocean, and it is called Swerve 101. So I hope you all enjoy, and I'll be right back.
You'd never not be happy with a new sugar daddy swerving up and down the 101. I wish it would compliment me. I wish it was user friendly. I wish I'd wished upon a star. Left hemisphere gone now.
30 Seconds of Nature, brought to you by Ducks Unlimited Canada. Learn how you can experience nature in your community at ducks.ca.
Tune in to Intravenous on Wednesdays from 10 to 11 a.m. for music and talk radio about all things, all genders. Discussing and approaching contemporary gender issues through an intersectional feminist lens, our goal is to educate, engage, and challenge the dominant hegemony. Intravenous, every Wednesday morning from 10 to 11, only on CJSF 90.1 FM. Diverse, independent, yours.
And welcome back to Sociologic here on CJSF 90.1 FM, Burnaby Campus and Community Radio from Simon Fraser University, where I will be your host for about the next 15 minutes before Connor, our music coordinator, takes over from 8 p.m. with his show Bitcuva until 10 p.m. So, yes, we were talking about the gendered economy before I played that song, which was Swerve 101 by The Wombats in Liverpool, England, off of their latest album, Oh the Ocean. And I'm going to finish up a bit with this gendered economy article, which I will have linked in the audio playlist for this episode on the website cjsf.ca for you all to have a read of. I think it's a really interesting article that a lot of people should be reading. But yes, moving on to kind of the care economy, which is talking about the one industry that runs on exploitation. So not only is unpaid labor in the household being exploited, it's not just this, it's the care economy as well. We're talking about childcare, we're talking about caring for the elderly, nursing, teaching, etc. It's built on the same system of undervaluation, with more than 75% of the world's unpaid care work being performed by women and girls, and women who leave the workforce to perform unpaid care, so women that leave the workforce to raise children, to be mothers, lose an average of $300,000 in lifetime earnings. So that is a crazy amount that you are losing to do what is expected of you as a woman by society. And even paid workers and domestic workers, they're underpaid, they're unprotected, and they are often working in very exploitative conditions. So this care work that we're talking about isn't considered just low value work. It's deliberately undervalued because of the capitalist system expecting women to be doing it for free. And this is an economic design that capitalism thrives off of. It's maximizing profit by externalizing the costs onto women. So capitalism is essentially just thriving by making women's work invisible and making it unpaid and unrecognized. Because if care work was fairly compensated and unpaid labor counted as productive economic activity, and women were not being forced into this financial dependency on men, the entire economic system would need to be restructured. And clearly no one wants to be doing that. Hence why it's very minor policies that are changing and only soon, like recent, not soon, but recently. So kind of moving on to like this topic and how it came to my attention to do this interview that I conducted with Dr. Amanda Watson was because I was looking at things to do for Intravenous, and I saw that as a part of Canada Day, I think it was from the Committee on the Elimination of Discrimination Against Women in Geneva, October 2023. The AFEAS, and excuse my pronunciation of this, the Association Feminista de Education et de Action Sociale places submission aiming to place women's unpaid work that is so-called invisible at the forefront of issues surrounding gender equality. And so it became a big thing. And then in the concluding observations, the CEDAW, which is the Committee on the Elimination of Discrimination Against Women, worries about the disproportionate burden of unpaid labour, caregiving and domestic responsibilities placed on women in Canada, which significantly hinders their social and economic empowerment and limits their access to education, employment opportunities and career advancement, therefore contributing to economic insecurity and reinforcing gender inequalities. That is what the concluding observations were. And following these findings, the committee called on Canada to implement measures to support women performing unpaid work and to develop mechanisms for assessing its impact on poverty, economic inequality, particularly among Indigenous women, women with disabilities and immigrant women. So it's now being made more of a forefront issue. A lot more people are talking about it than they were. It's still most likely not enough because I really had to do some digging to find all of this. So it's definitely not being spoken about enough, but we are seeing policy changes. So things like childcare initiatives to help women go back to work when they've just had kids and things like that are examples. sorry, I feel like I've got a scratchy throat coming on now. But unpaid work performed by women accounts for as much as 40% of GDP in some nations. And globally, women and girls are performing over twice as many hours of unpaid work each day as men, with women making up around 80% of paid domestic workers globally, meaning that they often engage in caregiving professionally and continuing it at home without compensation, which is what I was talking about earlier. So this increased time spent on unpaid labor is limiting women's potential earnings, creating a long-term financial constraint, and it's heightening a risk of poverty. So this has become obviously a very big issue about where women are not being able to achieve gender equality. Well, not just women, but society. We're not achieving gender equality, and this is going to be part of the reason why. So one of the big things about this being put at the forefront of issues in gender equality in Canada is a lot of scholars are arguing that we cannot reach gender equality without progression being made in this area. This is the main area that needs to be progressed. It needs to be recognized. It needs to be recognized that women are essentially mandatory for capitalism to work if they are at home and if they are completing this unpaid labor. Society is not going to function. Like they said at the start of the article, that if women disappeared from the global workforce today, the world would come to a standstill. But if women stopped performing unpaid labor, within 24 hours, economies would collapse because women are the ones raising future workers. They're the one that are caring for the elderly. They're the ones cooking. They're the ones cleaning, organizing households, and ensuring a seamless function of everyday life. So women are kind of a key to an economy that they don't get recognized for, they don't get paid for, is essentially what this whole article is talking about. And this isn't the only section. As I said at the start, there are plenty of articles in this series called The Gendered Economy, talking about the different hidden economic structures that keep women at a financial disadvantage, exploring all of the different ways capitalism is shaping women's lives, their labor, and their financial independence. So again, I'm going to reiterate it. Please go read the article. I will link it in the description area of this audio once I upload it. It's so well worth the read. It's very interesting, and it's an area that I don't think a lot of people discover. When I spoke to Dr. Amanda Watson about it, she spoke as well about how this is a part of the sociology discipline that she wishes was spoke about more. Obviously, I spoke about my experience coming from the UK in that it's really not spoken about in my curriculum. and I'm talking about one university and one school, when I was 16 to 18, but that curriculum from when I was 16 to 18 is from an exam board that's used across the whole country. So it's an area that isn't being taught a lot, and it keeps it hidden when it's not being spoken about. It keeps it hidden when it's not getting taught. And so part of the reason I love the radio here is that we're putting issues like these on air. We're giving them the platform, the space to be heard and to hopefully educate people and get people interested in reading more about it. So yeah, if you want to listen to the interview, it is on the Intravenous playlist on the cgsf.ca website. It was very interesting, and I want to thank Amanda Watson again for taking the time out to talk to me about that. And we are coming up to the end of the hour. I hope you've all enjoyed today's episode. I hope I haven't bored you all with it this evening. I know my time slot, you're probably all trying to relax, and I like to bring kind of prominent issues that I find are quite interesting to the table, but hopefully you have enjoyed today's episode. And the music coming up next from 8 to 10pm is Bitcoover with our music coordinator Connor, so I'll definitely stay tuned in. He's got a very exciting 2-hour episode for you all. I say that like 2 hours is a special thing. He does 2 hours every week, which I'm gobsmacked by. I don't know how he manages to do it. Me and Corey nearly died doing 2 hours just once. So yeah, I am going to leave you all with one last song. It is by a band called Catfish and the Bottlemen, and they are a Welsh band. The song is called Tyrants, and it's off of their 2014 album The Balcony, and they are one of my favourite indie rock artists from the UK. I've played them a bit on my open mics. If you were listening to those when I did those way back when I started here, they're a great band. I don't think they have enough recognition personally, but I think about that with all the artists I play. I don't think any of them have enough recognition personally. So yeah, this is off of their 2014 album, The Balcony, and it's called Tyrant. And stay tuned next week as I'll have another topic for you all. And I hope you have a good rest of your week, rest of your day, good start of your day, wherever you are listening to this from. Same.